say thanks. I do have to say this.
Cow.
I didn't watch the Billboard Music Awards until the very end, and I saw I saw Paula Abdul.
I love her.
Did you see her last night?
I did not.
She was amazing.
I keep hearing that.
In every way. She looked amazing. She sounded amazing. I don't know. On some of the award shows, on some of the television broadcasts that have to do with music, sometimes they lip sync. Do you know that, right? They don't always do it live. They should always do it live, but they don't because there's so many technical things going on that they think it's a safer bet to lip sync. So I don't know if she was singing those songs live last night or lip syncing. I know she was dancing live. But she looked great.
She didn't dance sync that?
No, there was no dance singing. No. But boy, it was, I mean, if somebody said to me, hey, you're only going to watch a couple minutes of the show, but it's the Paula Abdul part you have to see, I'd go, I don't think so. Wow, was that entertaining.
Well, she's a lot better dancer than she is a singer.
Yeah.
She was a choreographer. No, that's how she started her career.
It's true.
Right.
It's true, Wendy.
A choreographer, so.
I absolutely adore Kelly Clarkson. I think we should be best friends.
You've mentioned that in the past. How would that happen, though?
I'm done with Oprah.
You're no longer fake best friends with Oprah?
Why do you have to put it that way?
Well, because you can only have one best friend. That's why they're called the best.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's Kelly Clarkson, and I have to get to her somehow. I started watching The Voice because of her.
Yeah.
This is her second season. I think last, because then she's going to have her own talk show.
Right, right.
And then when we hang out and stuff.
Oh, you'll just hang out with her. You won't work on the show with her.
No, I'll be backstage and just.
Showing encouragement.
Yeah.
A lot of thumbs up.
We're
going to
be besties, yeah.
Yay, that was great.
I just love her so much,
yeah.
And she has such a voice. And
yes.
I don't know if I should say this out loud.
No, you should definitely say it.
It's not necessarily my style of music,
uh-huh.
But it might become it.
Oh, once you guys are best friends.
If you're in.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
Use that as the selling
point.
No,
I've got all your records.
I don't like them. It's not my type of music.
I do like them, but I guess what I should say is typically I don't go for that kind of pop music typically.
Right.
But I...
You like a harder-edged music.
A little bit.
Uh-huh.
But I absolutely love her voice.
Were you fake best friends with Grace Slick at some point? You were.
When we were on our honeymoon in Hawaii...
You and Grace Slick.
No, that was Jim and I.
Oh, you and Jim. All right.
There was an art gallery, and we walked in, and Grace Slick was just sitting there selling paintings that she had done. So we talked to her. She was super cool. I should have jumped in with the besties then.
You should have suggested it right out of the box.
I don't know how to go about saying, hey, want to be besties?
Well,
do I just say that?
You put together a resume, obviously, of other people you've been fake best friends with. And how that has gone. And then they read it and they go, well, that's the perfect fake best friend for me. I've got to be fake best friends with her.
Unless you bust my bubble all the time.
Find the tape of Paula Abdul from last night at some point. I'm sure it's all over the internet. But was she good.
I don't recall that they all lip sync at these things. I think it's pretty much live.
Well, they don't tell you.
Yeah. It's best for us not to know. But sometimes at the Super Bowl, they'll lip sync. Sometimes on Saturday Night Live, they've done it.
Wherever Millie Vanilli went, they did it.
Every time.
Most of them are live.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
In fact, was it Miley Cyrus that got in trouble because we found out she was lip syncing something?
It was
on SNL.
No, it was Jessica Simpson's sister Ashley.
Is that your fake best friend?
No,
She has, she's now identified as Jessica Simpson's sister who fake sang on SNL.
Right. That's what it says when they introduce her now at clubs. That's how they introduce her.
Give it up one time
for the girl who fake lip synced on SNL.
She's
Jessica Simpson's
younger sister
Ashley. Please, is anyone still here?
God, you are so funny. Mean, but funny.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will take a break, and then when we come back, I have to tell you something, the end result of something you and I discussed on the air yesterday. And I'm not going to say it went horribly wrong, but it went interestingly wrong.
Oh, I can't wait.
You and I discussed something, and then the punchline of what we were discussing, I met after the show. I can't say more than that. I'll explain more in a moment.
You have piqued our curiosity,
yes.
Bill Leff.
That's coming up. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. If you want to reach us during the show, you can either call us or text us at 312-981-7200. Either of those ways will work. It'll be fun. All right. Here's what you need to know to understand this. And Wendy, you were part of this, but you already know this part. You and I, part of WGN, we moved over to this new building about a year ago, and we're on the 18th floor. In the old days, we were on the first floor, and people would walk by and smile and wave at us, sometimes not as cordially as a smile and a wave. Sometimes there were other reactions. But we were right there on at ground level. So now we're on the 18th floor, and every once in a while, we will see behind us in one of the windows, we'll see a rope dangling, moving around a little bit. And what that means is there are window washers working on the building. More times than not, that's kind of a precursor to the fact that we may see one of the window washers. They may come to the 18th floor and wash the windows during the show. So yesterday during the show, we kept seeing the rope. We knew it was inevitable at some point. And you said, look behind you. And there was a guy right behind me in the window on the 18th floor, just almost like it was a ballet of some sort. He was just moving around from window to window. He was cleaning, but he was doing all the windows at one time, swinging back and forth. And I waved at him. And
you turned into a little boy, by the way.
It's not a big stretch for
mister.
Me.
Like you'd wave to an engineer.
I did do that. And he waved back, and you screamed, and you said, don't do that, because what if that could have caused a casualty? And I didn't want that to happen. So
we videotaped it during the business lunch behind me. We posted
did you?
It.
Yeah, I saw that. Did you know, Bertrand, what did you say? Like someone's watching me.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Someone's always over my shoulder.
Yeah.
All right. So I have to see that, Steve. I want to see that.
It's the same guy.
All right. So yesterday, as I'm leaving, Ryan Burrow gets in the elevator with me, and Ryan says, "Hey, that was really funny with the elevator guy." He goes, "I mean, with the window washer guy." He goes, "I always there's so many questions I have for those guys." I said, "Like what? What are your questions?" And he goes, "Well, the first question is," he goes, "this is the 18th floor they're on. So when you start that job as a window washer, do they start you out on a building this size, or do they start you out on like a 3 or 4 story building? And then after like 6 months, they move you up to an 8 or a 10 story building?" And I go, "Ryan, that's a great question." And he goes, "I have other questions. Like, what if," and every one of his questions were great.
Always a newsman.
That's him, right? So every one of them, I'm like, "God, Ryan, those are fantastic questions." We get to the ground level, we get to the door, and the two window washer guys are right there, kind of just outside the building. And I go, "Ryan, this is your chance. Ask those questions because I want to know the answers." So we went over and we introduced ourselves to those guys.
Did you say I was the guy who waved on the 18th floor?
I said that, and he laughed so hard, and his friend said, you could have killed him. I go, "I know. I'll never do that again." I go, "Let's have like this look that we'll have. Like if I see you through the window and you see me, I won't I'd want to wave to you, but I won't. But I'll just give you a kind of a nod of, oh, there's you and I'm here and here we are, you know?" And he was okay with that. But Ryan asked all those questions like one after another. He's like a machine gun. He's just like pelting him with all these questions. All great questions, all great answers. I feel like I know more. He said he's not scared at all. That was actually one of my questions. I go, "Come on, you've got to be scared. How could you be on the 18th floor? You're just dangling. There's nothing behind." He goes, "No, there's no. I'm never afraid."
And he was up above the 18th floor earlier.
Way above. Right.
I don't know how many floors are on this building, but it's pretty tall.
He said that you have the option when they teach you to do this, you can ask for lower buildings for a while, or you can just jump up to the higher skyscrapers. And he goes, "I got in this to wash window. I'm doing the big buildings."
Well, it's funny. I mean, you're not going to be less dead after falling 3 stories.
Yes, you are.
I don't think so.
3 stories, you could maybe survive and break a leg, 18.
Three stories, you're going to break more than a leg.
Depends how you fall.
Yeah, if you fall on a trampoline, maybe you'll break a couple legs.
People have jumped out of 3 stories before from fires and stuff.
And just dusted themselves off.
No, I mean, there'll be injuries, but...
But then also, think about this. He doesn't do this building every day. He and his friend do different buildings. So the rigging on every building has got to be a little bit different, you know?
I just am worried because I said, don't wave to him. Cause,
I know.
But his friend concurred.
His friend said, yeah, don't do that.
I was just saying it just because I thought, if they're kind of rappelling kind of down the building. So if one hand is holding the rope and then they let go to wave to you,
So my question is, is the sponge attached to them?
Oh, that's a good question. The window sponge.
Yeah, what if you run out of juice? You got to go all the way down.
That's a great question, too.
The sponge has to be, it's like more like a squeegee thing anyway. It has to be attached to them.
So it's attached to them like it's a squeegee suit? Like
no,
it's made,
like a tool belt with a hoop and a loop, and then it's connected.
Wouldn't that be great if you just were wearing the wiper?
Yeah.
And you'd scoop out and then slide into the window?
A squeegee hat. Why don't you invent it?
A squeegee hat. Oh, Wendy, that's a million-dollar idea, the squeegee hat.
It all starts with a question.
Did Ryan ask him about spiders? I'm always concerned because of the webs.
I don't know, but
he brought that up in the newsroom. He's like, I bet they run into all kinds of spiders.
Right.
Yeah, and they get bit by spiders.
I don't think they get bit by them.
Yikes.
He brought that up in the elevator, but he didn't ask them. But he said, this is Ryan speaking. He goes, I bet half the job is just spider cleaning. They should be called spider cleaners. And I go, no, I'd go with window washers because that sounds dangerous. They both sound dangerous, but window washers, you just say, oh, there's a guy really high up. That's dangerous.
You should call yourself a high-rise window washer, though. I would only do basement windows. That's it.
I would only do Laverne and Shirley's apartment.
Right. A garden apartment.
Yeah, garden apartments only for me.
Thank God. I thought it was that you wanted to see Laverne and Shirley.
Hello.
A peeping squiggy.
Peeping squiggy. That's my favorite firework on the 4th of July.
Get you in trouble.
What'd you get, Mom? Some peeping squiggies. Oh, this is going to be the best 4th of July ever.
You were very afraid for that man yesterday.
I can't even walk to the edge, like, to look out that window.
Not even
and
now?
He's just no.
Because when we first got up here, it's one of those things where you walk towards the window and you have to put your hand out to brace yourself, even just to look down.
Yes.
Now I'm pretty used to it.
It's still,
you haven't gotten any better?
I can get a little bit closer, but as I'm approaching it, my body just slows down and goes, stay away from the windows. Stay deep away from the windows.
It's double-paned safety glass.
I know.
No, and they wash hotel windows. Did you ask them if they have to give people notice and warning in case they are,
that's a fantastic. I didn't ask that, but that
close
is
the curtains. If you see the ropes, close the curtains.
Well,
that's what it says on my bumper sticker.
The ropes and you're sleeping,
I think that's part of the reason they go into the job, to be honest with you.
They're voyeurs.
Yeah. Yes.
They're washer voyeurs.
It's legal voyeurism.
Rear window.
Clean voyeurism.
On a rope.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Why there's a lot of questions.
I give Ryan, Ryan's a professional. He pelts away with the questions.
No, not
this
like
guy's
me.
Had no time to even.
Okay, but answer some of the questions. So you said he wanted to know if they start out high or move up.
They give us the option.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to go to a high building right away, or do you want to take it easy for a little while and work your way up?
And what was the other question you brought up? I can't remember.
If I could have potentially have killed one of them by waving at them.
Ryan said he was afraid to ask him about spiders.
Why? Those spiders.
Great question.
That's a great question.
He didn't say afraid. I said afraid.
Because for people who don't know, and I wouldn't know this if we weren't working on a daily basis on the 18th floor, as the summer progresses, these windows are just, they're filled with spider webs and big spiders. Really good-sized spiders. So that's a solid question.
Do the winds hoist them up here? Is that how they get up here? They can't. That little baby spider cannot possibly crawl all the way from the ground.
No, the itsy bitsy spider went up the water spout or down.
Down came the rain and washed the spider out.
Right? The rain doesn't wash them out. They just keep going.
Yeah, they cling.
Yeah, right.
Better than Saran wrap.
Right. Yeah.
Actually, I think Saran wrap was inspired by spider clinging.
Can I just say, Saran wrap only sticks to your hands, not to what you're trying to wrap. Every time.
Oh,
I have so much trouble, but I have a little tip.
What are you trying to wrap?
Leftovers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Put it in the freezer.
And then what happens?
Store your Saran wrap in the freezer, and they say, I haven't tried it yet, but I read it on Pinterest, I think. Put it in your freezer, and then when you go to use it, it won't stick to your hands because it's a little bit frozen, and when you get it around the bowl, that's when it'll sort of melt a little and will completely seal. So give it a try, people.
Wow, that's a good one.
That's excellent.
I would like to be the new Heloise. Hints from Heloise. You're Rona Barrett. Why can't I be
you
Heloise?
You can be Heloise.
Can I just say Kelly Clarkson loves Heloise?
Oh, she loves her,
Wendy.
My
God, see?
This could be your
end. This is the end.
Besties in the making. I love her.
All right, I have one more thing to bring up, and it's totally unrelated, but I need to ask. I know this will sound mean-spirited. It is not mean
towards me?
No.
Oh, okay, then
no, not at all. Do you think on days like today, where there's puddles all over the roadways, that cars go out of their way to splash you if you're on the sidewalk?
No.
You really don't?
The puddles are taking over the roadway so badly with this rain we've been having.
Yeah.
All the creeks and rivers are swollen. I don't think they can avoid it. And in I was just telling Michael driving to school today, I said, don't swerve into the other lane, but make sure you slow down. And then I go, and don't splash anyone.
Did you tell him that? Good.
Yeah. But sometimes it's unavoidable. Did you get splashed today?
I did not get splashed, but it's about a 3-block walk from where I park to this building, right? And I observed on the way in that cars, when given a choice between the three lanes, because there's three lanes that they could choose from on the roadway and the bridge to get from there to here, they almost always, not always, but almost always, chose the one closest to the pedestrians, thus splashing them throughout. And I thought, they have the option. They've got two other
options.
Maybe
they're going to turn right after the bridge, so they want to get in the correct lane.
Yeah, I don't think they're in that lane to splash. Now, so when you see people, Bill, do you tend to think that they
are out to get you?
Yes.
Do you see the average person as a good person or an evil person?
More good than evil.
You do?
Yes.
Okay.
More good than evil.
Why do you think someone's intentionally splashing someone? No one would honestly ever do that unless they were in maybe a Firebird or Z28.
Although, sometimes if it sets up perfectly, it is tempting.
I have never been tempted to splash anyone, Bertrand.
I just watched so many cars. Like, you see the bridge I'm pointing at. You have three lanes. You have the left lane, the center lane, and the right lane. And almost every time, easily 3/4 of the time, they chose the lane closest on both sides to where pedestrians were walking.
Well, there are... Yeah, because the center lane is not close to the pedestrians. Again, if you're coming across the bridge and you're going to turn either right or left, you're going to be in one of those outer lanes.
But they had more than enough time to make that decision. There was plenty of time, like yards and yards and yards and yards. It wasn't coming up really, really quick. But I just kept watching them splash people over and over again.
Maybe they saw your hat and they said, oh, he's got a hat on. Who cares?
No, they didn't splash him.
I was not splashed,
they
Mary.
Said, that's Radio's Bill Left.
Yeah, we can't splash him.
We can't get his pipes wet.
Right.
He needs them for the show.
They're very conscious of that here in town. All right, we'll take a break.
No, we'll just go
to news.
We
will not take a break, Wendy.
But it worries me that Bertrand said it is tempting.
It is.
It's not. I've never thought of that.
It's never occurred to you that...
Maybe a bike rider.
Have you never seen a Doris Day movie? I think it happens... every Doris Day movie has a scene where she dresses up for a job interview and gets splashed on the way.
It's usually light blue, I think.
It's almost always light blue. And there's also a scene where she's in the car wash and her convertible top goes down in the car wash.
Well, that I've done.
That happened.
But that's my own fault.
Right. Right. All right, it is news time now.
Who's after the news? Who do we talk to after the news? Paul Reiser.
Paul Reiser.
Love him so much.
Apparently, he did an interview with somebody in town yesterday, and it went horrible, and his PR people called us and said, can you please fix this? So we will do our best to fix it.
What is that, an actual cooking thing going on there?
No, I thought I'd give it a try.
What is it?
A cassoulet.
Oh, what's that?
Same as a casserole.
So why would they call it that?
I don't know. Should I call Paris?
No, it just seems to me, why don't they just call it a casserole? I mean, why do that to people?
Because they're bastards and they hate you.
Paul Reiser is here, the great Paul Reiser. Paul, from time to time, not because we're lazy, just because we like doing it, we have our guests give their own introduction. Would you mind doing that for us, please?
Oh, I should do my own introduction?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you meant your people, your audience gives the introduction.
That's also a good idea.
Oh, but okay. I should introduce myself.
Yes.
It's too late. I'm already here.
You're already here.
We missed the window for introduction.
Can we do it next time?
Yes. I'll call in just to do that and then not show up.
All right. That's fair. Paul Reiser is here. He's performing in town this Saturday, May the 3rd, at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. You want to go to northshorecenter.org.
Tomorrow, Friday.
Tomorrow.
Already, yeah.
It's coming up. How
Friday,
are you?
Yes. I'm going to, as soon as you're done yapping with me, I'm going to go to the airport. That's what I'm going to do.
All right.
Except for I just heard the traffic and weather. That sounds encouraging.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe some of the flights have been canceled. So check with your local carrier, Paul, before you get to the airport.
Wow. I'm so glad we spoke.
And, Paul, you're now working primarily indoors, aren't you?
I work mainly indoor venues, but you have to get there. And I've heard this may be not true. Often there's traffic in Chicago.
Yes, we do from time to time have a spot.
I've seen it myself. So so I'm expecting at least 26 hours of delay. That's how I'm leaving a day early just to beat the rush hour.
That's outstanding. I have to tell you, I saw you as part of a documentary a couple of nights ago, and it's a documentary. I don't even know if you know that you're in.
No idea.
It's called Welcome to Coochers, and it's about a resort in the Catskills that you played at when you were very young. Do you remember?
Yes. I don't remember the documentary, but I remember it. Coochers, yes. Coochers is a a legend. Really? I was in the documentary?
Yeah, they were mentioning all the acts that had played there before they were famous.
And Jerry, I spoke to them?
You were not shown. They showed an 8x10 of you from years and years
different.
Ago.
Well, that, see, I don't need, they don't bother me to tell me that.
Right. right.
yes, well, but it's good to know. Let me just recap. So a picture of me
yes.
was in a documentary
yeah.
that was seen in Chicago about a place that closed 30 years ago.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So now I'm all caught up.
right. I probably should have told you this in advance.
yeah, I wish you had told me. Well, I would have spoken to the nice people.
But
more importantly, I'll be there tomorrow in Chicago with not just a picture, my actual person.
Oh, you're actually going to perform this time?
Yes.
Oh,
it's going to be great. At
All
the
right.
North Shore Performing Arts Center, which is a great venue, and I'm looking forward.
Will you be doing some scenes from Selma that you were in?
What? Scenes from what?
From Selma.
How do you know that story?
Because, and I would like you to say it, but the Chicago Tribune wrote an article about mistaken identity and Paul Reiser. Go ahead.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, the story was, you know, I will tell you the story was, this is a sign that I'm getting older because I don't necessarily trust my own memory, that I was in a doctor's office and bumped into another actor, a very distinguished older gentleman, older than me even.
Wow.
This is a few years ago, and I said hello, and he said hello, and then he very warmly and genuinely said, I really loved your performance in the movie Selma. And I thought to myself, I wasn't in Selma. But in that split second, I thought, maybe I was in Selma. Because why would this guy lie?
Right.
And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go with him. I trust him more than I trust myself because I forget a lot of things. And I went home and watched it. I'm not in that either.
I'm in
the documentary on Kutcher's.
Yes.
But I forgot about it. But Selma, I was right. I was not in that.
Who do you think he saw in Selma that he thought was you?
Tim Roth. He said,
oh.
And then you know what happened? Finally, I did have to say to him, I said, you know, forgive me, I you might be mistaken. I don't think I was in Selma. And he said, did you not play George Wallace? And I went, oh, no, I definitely would have remembered playing George Wallace.
Wow.
You know? Then I went home and I looked, and that was Tim Roth. I went, okay, I could see how possibly.
You're by
I said,
the...
Are you not Robert De Niro? He said, no, I'm not Robert De Niro. I said, okay, then we're both wrong today.
Paul, you're so good in these Avenger movies, by the way.
My dynamite in those.
You're so good.
I forgot.
Yes. You're so good in that.
I got to tell you, I loved you in Stranger Things. People are texting.
Now that one I know for a fact.
Yeah.
I was in Stranger Things. You can't fool me there.
And somebody texted and wants to know how the Stranger Things came about. How'd you get hooked up with one of the coolest new shows out there?
Why would you be even suspect of that? I'm a very cool guy. Why is
that surprising?
You saw
him in Selma, Wendy. He was great in Selma.
I know.
I chose not to be in Selma. That's how cool I was. Unless I did. unless I was, in which case I loved it. Stranger Things came about crazily because the Duffer Brothers, who created that, called me and said, we have this new show. It was like the day after it came out. And said, if we do a second season, we have a character that we wrote with you in mind. And I said, well, that's absurd. And they said, they actually wrote it calling the entire time of the draft, it was called Dr. Reiser. And then they said, you know, why don't we just call Paul Reiser instead of getting somebody who maybe looks like Paul Reiser.
Like Tim
Roth. Tim Roth was unavailable.
Yeah,
exactly. I set you up. And there you go.
A fun show to do, Paul, I hope, was it?
It was great fun. Yeah,
yeah.
It was great fun, and those kids were very nice to me. I was, you know, I was Pops Comedy. I was by far the oldest person in the city, and it was great fun. And I just, I think my part is done. But I'm on this new show, Fosse Verdon, which is the Bob Fosse, Sam Rockwell, and Michelle Williams, which is on FX, and I got to do a couple of episodes in that, which was great fun. And that one I was in. I know for a fact because I saw it last night. Yeah. And but more importantly, where am I going to be tomorrow night? Tell the people.
All right. Paul Reiser will be seen at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. He'll be performing live there. You want to get tickets by dialing up northshorecenter.org/event/Paul Reiser. It couldn't be easier.
It couldn't be easier. And any problem, call Tim Roth. He'll get you in. But let me tell you, it's going to be a great Chicago. I haven't been in Chicago now for about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, we talked to you last time you were in town, and it's been quite a while. Why the delay?
You know, a little of me goes a long way.
Is that true?
You don't want to overstay your welcome.
Oh, I
you know
hope
what
that's
I'm saying?
Not
let
true.
Them, let the hunger develop. I've been busy doing other things, and I'm circling back, and they called and invited me, and I said, yeah, it'd be great. But and this time I'm bringing my buddy Vance Gilbert, who's opening the show. He's
musician.
A great singer. Yeah, great singer, songwriter. He's going to open the show, and he used to tour with George Carlin, which I only found out after we were working together. He did the last 7 or 8 years of George's performing years. And so I just, as a huge fan of George Carlin, I was always tickled with that connection. But he's great, and it's, I don't know, I always love when there's a musician and then a comedian. I love the you're getting all your bases covered. So it's going to be a great night.
Paul, some comics prefer to have a comic in front of them, but you would prefer to have a singer in front of you. Why? What's the thought process there?
I feel like, you know, I always question comedians over comedian. It feels like you're having the same meal twice.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like here's my analogy. If you have your mind, you're going out for a steak, and you really want to have a steak, and you can't wait, and you go to this great steak restaurant, and then because they're very nice, they say, you know, before you have the steak, we're on the house, here's a little hamburger. You're going, well, that's nice, but
yeah.
Now I don't want the steak so much.
Right.
I had. Basically the essence of a steak. So
yeah.
I know when I and same when I see a show. Yeah, I don't like to see two singers.
Yeah.
I like shuffle it up.
Mix it up a little bit. Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. That's the way it should be, as God intended.
Since we're talking to you,
yes.
It would be criminal to not mention the good news that Mad About You is returning to television.
Well, you say criminal. I don't know if it's legally binding. Yes, we just opened up our writer's room this week, and we started bouncing ideas around, and it's going to be fun. We were, it's been a long process, about 2 years. It was almost 2 years, a year and a half at least, that Helen Hunt and I said, yeah. They asked us, and we thought about it and said, gee, it sounds really silly. Why would we do that? And then we started talking about it and thought, it actually could be great fun, and we had a good reason to tell it. You know, we thought it wasn't a nostalgic sort of, hey, let's go revisit, but rather let's really check in and see what life is like 25 years into this marriage with a kid now gone. It's not, you know, most of your life is behind you instead of in front of you. It's a very different story to tell. So we said yes, and then it took a long time for them to get all their ducks in a row and line it up business wise. I don't know why it took so long, but we are jumping in, and we're going to hopefully have them all done by the end of the year.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Everybody wanted to be Jamie and Paul. I'm sorry, watching that
sure.
show, it's like, oh, I'll get married someday. It's not really like that, actually.
No, it is. In my house, every 30 minutes, we stop talking, and then we come back next week and we talk again. That's exactly, isn't that like how life is?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
I give.
And then at the end of the half hour, Seinfeld comes in with his friends to my house, and then they talk for half an hour. Yeah, it's that's the way I thought life should be.
I give Paul and Jamie Buckman credit for starting a trend. You named your the characters named their baby Mabel. All of a sudden, it's very in fashion to name your daughter something that was a popular name from years and years ago. I think you guys were the first ones to do that.
Well, we're very proud of that. In any way we can help the American people, we're here to serve.
It's working. It's working.
Will there be any musical guest stars like Yoko Ono or Cyndi Lauper? Are they coming back?
Oh, you know, we haven't gotten that far, maybe.
Oh,
we're only
going
to do 12, so I don't know how many times we're going to get to bring in people. We're going to do a short batch of 12, and then, I don't know, if I guess if it went terrifically well, we would maybe do another batch. But, you know, gone are the days where you have to do 24 episodes in 7 years. And that's if you're lucky, you know, if you're lucky and the show goes well. But that would be hard to do. It seems to me a younger person's game.
Paul, can I tell you who my favorite guest star was of all time?
I would like that.
Not just Carl Reiner, but Carl Reiner playing Alan Brady.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was excellent.
That was, Carl Reiner at that point had... He told us that he had been asked many times by many people to come and be on the show, and he didn't want to, didn't appeal to him. But the first time he did it was when we pitched an idea of come back as Alan Brady, which, you know, talk about connection. It was sort of a mind meld of like, wait a second, so Mad About You exists in a world, in the same world as the Dick Van Dyke Show, so Rob and Laura featuring
yep.
That doesn't seem, but it made all the sense in the world. There's Alan Brady.
So funny.
Someone wants to know if you found a new Murray for the reboot.
We have not. We will have an open casting session to get a new dog, because the original Murray, I'm not sure if he's gone. We don't speak to each other. A lot of times you work with somebody and they blow you off. And Helen and I are friends. John Panko and I are friends. Murray got a little big for us. as my father would say, he's high-hatting us. He would high-hat us. What's the last time you heard that expression?
It's been a long time.
Never.
Paul, it's been a long time. Paul, about now that all these years have passed, you guys did a story arc where Paul and Jamie, even though they were crazy in love with each other, they kind of went their separate ways for a story arc.
Very good. You're very smart, because that was a question we decided yesterday. In fact, when we did our finale like 20 years ago, and it was like this week, it was really the first week of May, 1999, we did a one-hour finale where we jumped ahead into the future specifically so that we would not only never be tempted to come back, but we wouldn't even be able to come back, because we'll have already told the story. And the thinking was that, you know, marriage is not easy, and certainly if you're going to make it all the way to the finish line, you don't get there free of charge. There's a lot of ups and downs. So we wanted to show that this couple, who did, absolutely, was so committed and loved each other, even they had their tough spots. And there's once or twice where they separated. We never said how long or how seriously, but they just said, you know, enough is enough. And then ended up back together, because that's how it was meant to be for them. So we had a long discussion yesterday, like, where in that arc are we starting? Is this before they broke up and came back, or is it after? And then, you know what everybody said? Nobody's going to remember that. Who remembers that?
Oh, everybody remembered that.
Look at that. It's you. You remembered.
It was I cried when they had their issues, because, like, no couple could.
As did we. You know, we took it very seriously. We were talking about, there was a scene halfway in the fourth season, where they were having trouble getting pregnant, and they had a big breakup scene, and it got kind of funky. This wasn't even where they separated, but they just talked about it. And they were having trouble getting pregnant, and each of them came very close to having an affair, and it was very earned. You know, it wasn't just frivolous. They were each feeling very, not feeling great about themselves. He was not feeling as a man, and she was not feeling herself as a woman, because they weren't able to have a kid, and they just started drifting apart. And we had this, someone timed it, said it was an almost eight minute scene. I think it was almost one shot of just us on a park bench saying, well, you know, then maybe we're done. You know, this is it. If we can't get past this infraction and this lack of trust, maybe we're done. And I remember crying when I wrote it, and that made me think, oh, this is going to be good. I was typing and going, oh, man, I can't believe it. And then we performed, and it welled up every time we shot it. And people tell me to this day they watched that and cry. So I thought, well, that's a good thing. Yeah. I'll tell you something. I probably shared this with you last time I was here. When one of the nicest parts about going out and doing stand-up again, because I didn't do it. When Mad About You started in 92, I just didn't get out and work till recently, about 5 or 6 years ago. And now, when I go out, after the show, I'm always out in the lobby, and they'll sign books or whatever people have and say hello. And everybody's got a story. And everybody comes over and say, boy, you know, we got married to your theme song. Or, boy, that episode is exactly what happened. And I didn't know any of that. You know, I never quite realized that for the people who watched the show, how intense an experience it was, what a connection it was. It was really, really gratifying to hear that.
There was no social media back then to reach out to you guys and say, hey, I'm feeling this too. So.
We would drive by your house and honk, Paul, but you never came to the window.
That was discouraged. We did discourage the house honking.
Stuff happens. Whatever. Yeah. Paul Reiser, the great Paul Reiser, performing in town this weekend at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. It's an 8 o'clock start. You want to go to northshorecenter.org.
Tomorrow. So basically, tomorrow. You have 36 hours. You have 35 hours. 34
leave now.
Hours.
Leave now.
Time is ticking. and Tim Roth will not be there, but I will.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah, but come on down, and it's going to be a great show. Hey, and if you guys are there, come by and say hi, would you?
We would love to, Paul.
Absolutely.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks. You bet.
Paul Reiser, everybody.
Love him. Yep. You can go to NorthshoreCenter.org for tickets, and I believe there are still some tickets available.
So true.
All right, I love Paul Reiser. I always have. I loved him in the movie Diner.
Modell.
Oh, he's didn't so remember
his
character.
You're going to finish that sandwich?
Yeah.
So funny.
I like his delivery. And I don't know if the listeners are playing because somebody mistook him for being in Selma, but somebody said, you know, I've always been a fan of Paul Reiser even after he left Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, that was not him. That was Paul Michael Glaser.
There was something, he was great in episode one of the Romanoffs. I don't know. I think that's true.
I've not seen the Romanoffs.
I don't know what they're doing now.
I saw episode one, but
is he in that, Steve, or
I don't
remember.
He was in a series. I wish I'd thought of it earlier. Red Oaks, which has been on Netflix. It was like, I think, three seasons.
I don't know Red Oaks either.
Somebody, Paul, love Red Oaks.
Oh, yeah.
Did you text that, Steve?
I did not.
Oh.
I saw him last time he was at the Center for Performing Arts at the North Shore. I was there.
Yeah, he's a really good stand-up.
I can't believe it was 4 or 5 years ago.
He's so good at stand-up.
Please ask Paul if he's going to bring back My Two Dads.
Oh, I forgot about My Two Dads.
Yeah, there'll be a big reboot of that as well.
Oh.
I can't wait. I love him. I think he's great. If you want to go see him, get tickets, and let me tell you where you can get them. You can go to NorthshoreCenter.org or just go to his website, paulreiser.com, Reiser.
Well, we had Paul Reiser on, Wendy, so it only makes sense that now we talk about Satan. That's how it works. Penny Lane joins us right now. Penny has made some great documentaries in the past, The Pain of Others, Our Nixon, Nuts, and her latest documentary, very controversial, Hail Satan. Penny, first of all, thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having
me. Great to talk to you. I mentioned that it's controversial. You're a filmmaker. That's not a bad thing if you're making a documentary that's controversial. I bet that's a good thing, isn't it?
Oh, I'm pretty okay with it.
Yeah. People are talking about it. That's what you want. Right?
All right. Exactly.
We watched the trailer. I want to start, Penny, by saying I'm a Catholic. I'm not a very good Catholic, but I am a Catholic. And I'm watching it, and I'm getting a weird reaction in my stomach about Satan. If you believe in God, you believe that Satan exists as well. But then I wonder why people honor him and idol him when he's not a good dude.
Yeah, well, the first thing to say is that the members of the Satanic Temple, which is the subject of my film, are non-theistic, so they don't venerate Satan. They don't believe Satan exists. They've instead organized their religion around this symbolic figure as the ultimate rebel against tyrannical authority and unjust, you know, oppressive authority figures. So, yeah, so they don't worship the devil. They do not commit acts of evil. They are not evil. They do some pretty good stuff.
And I just want to say, that said, that it kind of made me uncomfortable. I got to be honest with you, Penny. I can't wait to see it. Because that's
well, great. You're the perfect viewer.
Because that's what we need to do. Just because something's different from you doesn't mean it's wrong. I mean, open your eyes and see what else is out there. Then after you see it, you can go, well, you know what? That's not for me. But that's fine.
I think that's the ideal way to walk into this film. So, yes, thank you.
So, what, Penny, if you wouldn't mind, explain to me, they're not necessarily Satan worshipers, believers in him, believers in the devil, but it's called the Satanic Temple. They're called Satanists. Explain that. What am I missing?
So, Satanism as a self-assigned religious identity has only been around for about 50 years, since the mid-1960s. The Satanic Temple was only founded in 2013 and collected up a bunch of kind of lone wolf Satanists that were out there that kind of didn't have a church to associate with. Satanism as a religion is quite individualistic, and they don't tend to gather together in big groups. So the Satanic Temple shows up and sort of starts to motivate Satanists to become part of an organized religion for the first time.
To what means? What is their goal?
So their goal as a movement is to challenge the idea that America is a Christian nation, which they think is a pernicious idea that has allowed people in the kind of evangelical right to assert themselves into government and into public spaces in ways that violate the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, which says that, you know, there can't be a state religion. There can't be a religion that is given preferential treatment by the government over other of religions. And so what the Satanic Temple does is they kind of show up in places where they feel that church-state line has been breached, and they say, well, great, now that you've opened the public forum, you know, whether that's a statehouse lawn or a public school, to religious expression, we would also like to express our religion in that forum. And you can't say no because you've already said that religious expression can happen here, and you can't just say, well, only Christians can have their monuments or their literature in schools and no other religion. So they, in doing this kind of activist work, they perform a kind of stress test for the First Amendment to see if we really are living our values.
And the reaction they get from the more established religions is kind of what you'd expect to some extent. They're not too happy about it, right?
And it's so see that. I got to say, it's just so wrong. We're all human beings at the core, and you just shouldn't be saying mean, terrible things to someone's face like that.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a little upsetting, you know. But, you know, as you said, it's a little bit too be expected as well.
Penny, if you wouldn't mind, now keep in mind, Wendy and I have only seen the trailer. We've not seen the entire film yet of Hail Satan. But I know that there's some controversy having to do with it, with a statue, right? Do I need to say more? You know what I mean.
Yeah, well, basically the film tracks, you know, kind of the origin story of this new religious movement. So it tracks the first 6 years of the Satanic Temple's existence. And one of the big storylines in the film, if you will, has to do with this Baphomet monument, which is a 9-foot-tall bronze monument of a kind of goat-headed, angel-winged, sort of demonic-looking deity flanked by children kind of looking up at it adoringly.
Yeah.
And they are on a quest to have this monument placed on a statehouse lawn somewhere that has already erected a Ten Commandments monument to sort of avoid the appearance of government, you know, picking one religion to the exclusion of others.
And people are furious.
Well, yeah, some people are furious. Other people think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, right now they're trying to get this monument placed in Little Rock, Arkansas, and the film kind of covers the trajectory of that story as well.
We have Penny Lane on the air with us, director of Hail Satan. It's a documentary. You can go to HailSatanFilm.com. You mentioned that some of these people do some good work. Can you tell us some of the good things that they do?
Sure. Well, in addition to, you know, being on the front lines of this First Amendment battle, which, you know, is actually to the benefit of all of us as citizens, all of us benefit from having a secular state that allows us to practice our religion to the fullest extent privately. They also have chapters in different communities, and each chapter functions sort of just like we expect a church to function. They come together to have services. They also come together to do community service work. So around the country right now, you could find groups of Satanists that are doing things such as organizing blood drives, collecting socks for the homeless, cleaning up highways, cleaning up beaches, cleaning up parks, organizing menstrual products for homeless women, things like that.
Has anybody turned them down, Penny? Has anybody said, I know you're giving us charity, but we don't want charity from you, you're Satanists? Has that happened at all?
It has. It has happened. It has happened in a number of places, and there are state governments that have turned down their application to adopt a local highway, for example.
Yeah.
All right, but getting back to what Bill said, it's just the term that is scaring people. You know, and I have to be honest with you, and I just know from watching this, I can concur that we are all pretty much afraid of what we don't know. Once we know more about something, we can decide whether it's for us or not. But maybe using a different name, like, you know, I don't know what you, it's just that word Satanist and Satan is what's kind of turning everybody against them.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, the Satanic Temple would say, well, too bad. We are Satanists. You know, nobody calls themselves a Satanist because they're trying to win a popularity contest.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of don't mind if people are offended and freaked out by them. It's sort of a little bit of fun for them as well, I have to admit.
Well, yeah, they like the attention. Just looking at some of their, I kind of like their styles, if you want to know the truth, with the dark hair. I think they look really cool, but they are people that want attention. Wouldn't that be true?
I think that they specifically kind of revel in being different from the norm. They don't want to be normal. They want to stand out as being outsiders. And they think that being an outsider is a rather noble thing to be. So on some level, of course, they're human. They want to be accepted and loved for who they are. But on another level, the kind of person who calls himself a Satanist, you know, doesn't mind sticking out, doesn't mind being different.
Penny, did you get a chance to talk to any of their families, their parents, who said, you know, we raised them a certain way, and now look what's happened? Did you get a little bit of that?
No, we didn't. The film really is not a biographical sketch. It really does cover the movement in a much bigger, more idea-driven way.
And I do want to point out, it started out a few years ago with, I think, just three members, and it's grown incredibly in a few short years. From three to how many members?
From three to over 100,000.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Just a couple of years.
Good golly. Mm-hmm. I was going to say good God, but
no,
I didn't want to.
Don't do it, Wendy.
And then I was reading on thevoice.com, vox.com, the movie plays like a comedy. Bill, when we were watching the trailer, you saw one of the comments was...
One of the comments said, hilarious. Was that your goal, Penny?
Yeah, there's really no question that the Satanic Temple and Satanism in general embraces a great deal of humor and fun. Like, they like to have fun, they like to be funny, and, you know, there was no question from the outset this would be a very funny film, and it is very funny and entertaining. I think the real surprise is how ultimately moving and inspiring people find it. Most people are not expecting to walk into a film called Hail Satan and walk out feeling quite so uplifted and inspired.
And what drew you to this project?
Well, kind of like everything we've been talking about. I mean, you know, it was kind of this, at first I thought there was a kind of clever political prank being played that I thought was clever and cool, but it was really once I realized that underneath that prank there was a sincere and coherent religious worldview there that people didn't know about, that everybody thinks they know something about Satanism, but I'm here to tell you that they're mostly very, very wrong. They've never met a Satanist, they don't know what Satanists believe, and the film really seeks to educate people, but in a very fun and entertaining way.
Actually, Penny, I got to be honest, I think it's very possible many of us have met Satanists and don't even know it. I saw some of them where you just go, oh yeah, they're dressed just like you and me, there's no real difference except for their religious or political affiliation to the Satanist temple.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think, you know, what it goes to show is that you shouldn't judge people based on what they look like or what they call themselves. You should judge people based on their actions, and that's really what the Satanic Temple is asking us to do.
Because, come on, man, we are all the same. We breathe the same air. Our heart beats just like every one of us, so
yep.
More in common than more apart or something.
Absolutely agree.
Where can we see this, Penny?
Well, in Chicago, it's opening at the Music Box this weekend, and my understanding is that there will be members from the local Chicago chapter of the Satanic Temple present for various Q&As.
So that could sway people into going or not, so keep that in mind. And so can we just go to HailSatanFilm.com and find out where it's playing and where we can see it?
Yes, absolutely. That's the way to do it.
Penny, great talking to you. What are you working on next? Do you have a project in the works after this?
It's all a very big secret.
Oh.
You'll have to wait and see.
All right. Very mysterious.
Well, we'd love to talk to you again.
I would love that. Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Penny. Take care.
Take care.
Penny Lane, documentarian, her work again, Hail Satan. Not exactly what we thought.
No, and right? See, that's why it's so hard. I try not to judge people. I really do. Sometimes it slips through. You look at somebody, they're not like you. You talk to somebody, it's like, wow, I don't agree with that. But can't we all get along?
Yes.
I mean, we kind of can. We got to share this world. We got to find a way to do it.
It's all in our new segment, 6 at 666, Wendy. It's a new segment we're
starting. Not my segment.
You're not going to do that one?
All right. It makes me nervous.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then he's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys' tea.
Don't you look forward to our weekly chat with Dean, Dean, Dean?
I can't tell you how much I do.
You know what? I heard the song on which this Dean, 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 Dean song.
Dream, that, Dream, Dream?
Yes, I heard the actual song
Yeah.
Not long ago. And I go, well, that's weird. Those are weird lyrics.
It is kind of them. Yeah.
I think our version is much more popular.
Way better.
Now.
A much bigger hit, Dean. How are you? Everything good?
Is that the Everly Brothers?
Yes.
Do I remember that right?
Yes, it is.
Very good. Very good. Boy, you creamed that guy on Jeopardy.
I can't stop watching him.
Have you been watching him, Jamie?
I have not.
Oh, Dean.
But
not, so
I don't know why I'm busy in the afternoon or something that I can't watch. I have been hearing from a lot of people that the last episode was very dark, that it was very difficult to see everything that was going on the set with all the dragons and the fighting and all that that was going on.
I think that's Game of Thrones.
I may be mistaken.
I think that's not Jeopardy. I think that's on Game of Thrones.
I often get those two mixed up.
I think it would be a great movie or made-for-TV movie to show the producers of Jeopardy feverishly trying to find a guy to take down this current champion because he's costing them so much money.
I'm sure they are, don't you think?
It'd have to be.
I mean, it was good publicity for a little while, but now the producers have to be sitting there going, all right, how are we going to get rid of this Naperville guy?
Although, Dean, I have to be honest, I usually watch the show. I usually watch Jeopardy about once a week, and now that he's on it, I've only missed it once in the last 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Look, see?
I love it.
See?
I so admire this guy because he's just...
He's going to be on it for the rest of the year, you know?
He could be. Although next week they're doing one of their Tournament of Champions. They do these things. Sometimes it's college kids, sometimes high school, sometimes it's teachers.
Yeah.
I think next week they're doing a teachers tournament. So they've got to give him a week off for that.
That's going to wreck his mojo.
I'd like to see them bring in some...
What is a monkey paw?
High school student and some kid takes him out.
Right. That would be great.
You have a dark side, Dean. You know that?
That would be great. Dean, we opened the show talking about last night's music awards.
The Billboard Music Awards. Yes.
How much of it did you see?
Every single minute.
Every minute.
Please, I want Kelly Clarkson to be my BFF. We would be the best of friends.
She's very likable, isn't she?
I adore her, and she's so ultra-talented.
She is such a good singer. She did. That's a hard job, hosting a show like that.
Oh, she hosted it yesterday.
Yeah.
I didn't know
very,
that.
Very difficult job. And she performed a couple of times, I think, if I remember. She did a very good job. She didn't get in the way of the show, which sometimes a host can do. She wasn't trying to do hilarious comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Note to some of the presenters on future award shows, maybe just go out there and read the names of the nominees.
Oh.
No need to try to do hilarious
comedy.
Was
that bad? Did they not succeed?
There were times, Wendy, don't you think?
I didn't watch the whole thing.
Some of the... Who is? I like very much Kumail Nanjiani.
Nanjiani
and Dave Bautista.
Yeah,
they were together because they're starring in a movie that's coming up.
I interesting like them. Casting. Those
they're
two
very
together.
Funny. It's like an odd couple.
Yeah.
Comedy that's coming up, and they're just it's not the place. People aren't paying attention to any of the comedy. It always falls flat.
It's a tough room to do comedy in anyway.
Right.
And they didn't probably write it, right? They had writers
to
do it.
No, it's so clear that somebody wrote, we've got this guy and we've got this girl. Let's make them say this.
It'll be awkward. It'll be fun. You'll see.
That's my biggest criticism of the whole thing, because otherwise I had a blast watching the show.
How about Paula Abdul?
56 years old, and she was dancing up a storm.
It was fantastic.
Tossing herself around, jumping off a like three-flight scaffolding into the arms of her backup dancer.
Luckily.
And
that would have been ugly if that had
not
caught
been good
her.
On live TV. That would have not been good.
But, Dean, I've never been really it's not that I don't like Paula Abdul, but I wouldn't go out of my way. And last night I just happened to turn it on when she started, and it was so good.
It was very nostalgic. And she said, it was lip-synced like crazy. This whole show, the lip-syncing was terrible.
That's what Bill said, and I didn't.
Wendy didn't believe me.
Yeah. How can they do that, especially on a music awards show?
I guess, you know, the rationale that they use is we have backup vocals because it would be too difficult. Like that Paula Abdul routine.
Yeah.
It was so dance-centric.
Yep.
There is no way she could have maintained her breathing to sing and sound as good as she did singing, doing that strenuous dance routine.
Right.
So that's that I get. But you know, some of the other ones were clearly lip synced, and I guess
that's
too
bad.
I guess I don't mind really. I mean, it's supposed to be live TV. You should make it try to be as live and organic as possible. It winds up sounding too controlled
My
book.
One other thing I have to tell you really quickly. It's a movie you talked about here with us months ago, but I didn't get around to seeing it until just a few nights ago. This movie, Stan and Ollie, about Laurel and Hardy.
Wow, yeah.
Really, really good.
Isn't that a fantastic
movie?
Yeah. And it breaks my heart that it came and went. Nobody saw it. I hope people will go see it the way you did.
It's on the pay-per-view.
By that,
services.
I mean go to Bill's house.
Yeah, see it at my house. Yeah, you got to see it at my house.
Come to Bill's house and watch it.
Especially John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan play Oliver Hardy and Stan Laurel, and boy, you feel like you're actually watching them. I don't know how you do a better job.
They're so good. I talked to John C. Reilly at the Toronto Film Festival when he just finished making that movie and talked about how proud he was of it and how difficult it was, that he was carrying around like 50 pounds of wardrobe and prosthetics to make him look like Oliver Hardy.
Because it sure doesn't look like John C. Reilly, I'll tell you that.
Tiny bit in the eyes, maybe, but it's pretty accurately Oliver Hardy, but it's not even the physical appearance is there, but it's the soul of the character that he captured in that movie that is so moving. And same with Steve Coogan for Stan Laurel. It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
So I hope people will catch up with it.
Yeah, find it. It's worth seeing.
Yeah, definitely.
Well worth seeing. Dean
Glad
Richardson.
To see Bill taking my suggestions 6 months after I give them.
I always wait a half a year, Dean.
I wait a full year.
Yeah, you don't want to rush on these things.
All right, we'll talk more with Dean.
Next week they're going to see the Star Wars.
Right?
I mean the one from 1976.
I hear good things. You said good things about it. Right. All right, we'll take a break and then more with Dean next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Talking to Dean Richards, and we look forward to this every week. God, I love Seth Rogen. Can I just say that?
You're going to love this movie.
Oh, good.
Long Shot?
It's called Long Shot. It's Seth. It's the two people you would never think of putting in the same movie together, Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron. She plays the Secretary of State of the United States, kind of a Hillary Clinton character, not exactly, but in that she's Secretary of State and that she wants to be President of the United States.
Are there pantsuits, Dean?
There are tons of pantsuits that are in this movie.
Oh.
Yeah, they have a whole section in the credits of the movie. Sometimes you see like the names of animators.
Yes.
This one, pantsuit
pantsuit
providers.
Wranglers?
Yeah, pantsuit grips.
Oh, excellent.
Who are credited in this movie. She plays the Secretary of State to the president, who is played by Chicago's own Bob Odenkirk, who is sort of a cross. Not exactly Donald Trump, but he became president by first starring on a reality show. But it's not like a Donald Trump character. It's a kind of different character, but it's a very funny character. All of the side characters here are very hilarious. But she also happens to have been the babysitter back in the day to a young little boy who became a writer, kind of a maverick, raucous writer on the internet, mostly left-wing writing. So he quits his job when his company is purchased by a right-wing media mogul.
That could never happen.
That, I know, possibly could never happen to any companies here in Chicago, especially. But in general, it's an obvious Rupert Murdoch reference to this movie. So he quits his job. He's out of a job. A chance meeting. He runs into his old babysitter. Doesn't know that she's Secretary of State. They start talking a little bit. And while she's gearing up to run for presidency, she needs somebody like him to kind of, shake up her campaign, shake up her image, become a speechwriter for her, and shake up the way that she talks and her, some of the things that she's putting forward. And they start both a professional relationship and, their old, personal relationship. He always had a crush on her from when she was his babysitter. And the movie just kind of evolves into a kind of a sweet romantic comedy, but an incredibly raunchy comedy at the same time. That's very funny. Think there's something about, there's one particular scene that everybody remembers in There's Something About Mary. That there is a scene in this new movie, The Long Shot, that also will remind you of that scene. That's the raunchy factor on how far this movie will go. It's funny. It's very sweet. The chemistry between these two just completely shocked me. I did not think that these two would work together, and they work beautifully together.
They seem like an unusual fit.
It's an odd fit that somehow works, and I credit both of their acting abilities with this. And it's a very smart script as well. There's nothing predictable about what happens in this story. It's a little bit of a spoofing of the current political situation. But it's, you know, it's, of course, there are tons of drug references in the movie. That's required by law with
any Seth Rogen movie.
If you follow him on Instagram, all he does is post pictures of ashtrays that he collects. And they're some of them are pretty cool looking, I got to be honest with you. But he's a nutball.
What is your Dean's List on this one, Dean?
I gave it a Dean's List B+.
Oh, yay. Excellent. Very, very good.
I did not go into this thinking I was going to like it. And I got
to
say,
I like to hear this.
Off, so I really enjoyed it.
And Dean, we only have a minute, but Intruder, that's the Dennis Quaid movie, right?
Dennis Quaid, Michael Ealy, Megan Good, young couple by a beautiful old home in Napa Valley that the Dennis Quaid character has lived in all of his life. He reluctantly sells his house, and this new couple move in, and they want to make it their own. This guy keeps showing up at their house. The previous owner keeps showing up at their house. He's cutting the grass. He's, you know, doing things around the house, and they think, oh, that's, you know, the sweet old man misses his house. But then he starts breaking into the house, and it goes a little beyond that, and it becomes one of these, you know, guy that won't go away kind of white knucklers. The storyline here is not terribly original. Mm-hmm. The performances are, I guess they're okay. They're not great. Dennis Quaid, it's fun to watch Dennis Quaid play crazy, but there really isn't anything in this movie that jumped out and really made me want to love it. I wound up giving it Dean's List seat. So right. It's an okay white knuckler, not a great one.
Dean, thank you so much. We'll talk to you in a week.
Have a great weekend.
That's Dean Richards, everybody. Coming up, The Stories That Matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.